Okay, so this class is made it to Yom Kippur, now what? Okay?
I especially want to hear the answers to the fourth one down.
Well, let's see.
The third one down.
So I want you to imagine, I couldn't do this in such a way that you couldn't see both sides, but I wanted you to imagine, how do I react when someone else comes late for our meeting? So I take a pen, and I think each of us should write a reaction. If you have a pen, take time and write. How do you react when you schedule a meeting and someone else comes late? Right, the other person for the meeting comes late. We're going to go through them. You don't have to do anything, but it's worthwhile.
Like Kwame did.
Kwame came late for a meeting?
Oh, not for you. For Carrie.
Okay. When someone loses my... give me a good one.
Book.
Loses my book. They borrow a book of mine and they lose it. Number three. I'm sorry, I have to hit this phone call. So maybe we'll learn. Well, she broke her rib. See, what you have to realize, especially with older people, is she didn't break her rib. She fell. So you have to ask yourself now, why did she fall? So the reason why she fell, well, it's not important, you know, but she never got that far. And so, thank God she's still with us, and it's very, very serious. So we should learn for her a foolish name, and she should have a refuah. Okay, I think her name is Chava Chana Bas Chayaleah, maybe? Is that sound right? I know for sure her mother's name is Chayaleah, because it stuck with me.
No, but it's not wrong.
Right, you wrote it down?
Yeah.
Chana Racha Bas Chayaleah. Okay. When someone talks in shul, the guy next to me talks in shul, you think that person is? I can't say. Okay.
More on?
Oh, you need a seat? Are there any more seats?
Wait a minute. Here.
Yeah.
Is that a pen?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sitting at the JCC. I'm trying to watch Sports Center, and the guy next to me takes a thing and channel surfs.
I have to be at the Sports Center.
You're doing fine.
What?
I do the same thing.
You do the same thing? Next. Okay. I'm in the middle of talking to Eddie Katz, and all of a sudden, you know, somebody comes and butts in and interrupts our conversation. Okay, so you think that person is? You say what?
I'm saying that's one of my pet peeves, because they say, excuse me, I'm sorry, but I'm talking to somebody. You know, they think it's kosher.
That's right. Okay, good. Okay. Let's skip a couple. We don't have to do them all. You're standing in line at wherever. This is my favorite. This is my favorite, not for the Shalosh Shittos. You're driving on an exit, right? And there's a long backup. And some guy zooms all the way to the front and cuts in.
Right, and that's what slows down the rest of
the people.
So we all think that person should be?
Hung.
Right, shot.
It's okay to take that crowbar to the guy right
from
the
radiator. Well, then
that would put on
the
troops out. Okay, one last.
What are they doing? Okay. Super shot. When you get home, I actually did this tonight. Before we were leaving, confession, this is going to be a big confession one. Before we were leaving, Rina asked me, we went upstairs with the Tisha kids tonight. Before I left, she said, do me a favor, put this pasta in the bowl. And I forgot to do it. I forgot to do it. I left and I forgot. All right, so how does she feel?
Annoyed.
Can't
trust.
Vindicated.
Vindicated?
What?
She actually knew he was going to forget, so she thought
it wrong. Doesn't happen often.
It depends how often it happens. Oh, I forgot. Oh, yeah.
Vindicated.
When somebody puts you on call waiting, that's my favorite.
Oh,
I forget about you. Good.
Put on call waiting and they forget about you.
Good.
Put on hold.
Okay. So now, what do you have, Cheryl, for, have you been writing?
I've been
writing.
Annoyed.
Annoyed. Anger annoyed. So good.
I have one that says shh.
What, talk to him, Gavin? Okay.
Stuff a sock in their mouth.
Yeah, good. And then, so now when I talk in shul, what do I say? What? I say one of two things. It's important. Or, no, everybody can hear you, that's for sure. Or we say, I just have this one thing to say. Right? When somebody loses my, I borrows my book and loses it, I say they're careless. When I borrow a book and lose it, even so,
yeah.
It happens. What can I do? It was a mistake. Things happen. Okay. That's not the point. You know, they lose your whatever, your good pen.
Only, you know, the thing that somebody handed down. It's not replaceable.
Yeah. Right, not replaceable.
I wouldn't learn that out.
And the point the point is not whether you can replace it or not. The point is, here, I lent them this thing, and the least they could do is have respect enough to take care of it. Except, of course, when we lose it, oops, right? So, you know, okay, when somebody else interrupts our discussions, they're rude. It's a pet peeve. Except, of course, when we have to get a word in.
Really important.
Yeah, because it's really important.
Okay?
When somebody else cuts your line, you want to shoot them, take a crowbar to them. Right? So it happened to me on Friday. Oh, it's hibernating. Great. On Friday, so I go from here, I usually go to Westbourne. I go from the JCC to Westbourne. Everybody, you know, the whole firm community ends up in Westbourne on Friday afternoon. So I take 696, and I get off at the exit for Woodward. Now, it just so happens that there was a backup on Woodward. It just so happens that there's always a backup at that light. You know what light I'm talking about? It's because everybody's going straight towards Maine. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to turn towards Woodward. So what happens is, I usually get in the right lane because everybody's waiting to go to Maine, and then there's a whole another left turn lane. I know I'm confusing you all, but there's a left turn lane that ends up being empty.
Right.
So am I cutting or am I not cutting?
Everybody does.
Right? Everybody does.
It's a traffic pattern.
I'm taking advantage of a traffic pattern, except for the person who's sitting way back, seeing me zoom right ahead. And believe me, I tell you, I've known about it because I'm wearing a yarmulke. Oh, those Jews don't make for anyone. Mm-hmm. You know? You think you're
talking about it is with a yarmulke?
Yeah, it's their responsibility. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So on the one hand, I know why I'm doing it because, you know, why should I sit back there when really the lane is empty? Mm-hmm. But everybody else, they have no idea. They just get kicked off at me. Okay? Leave something for you to do. So it's very interesting. When you leave for somebody else to do, made a mistake. But very often, we take it as a sign of something greater. If you really cared about how important this was to me, you would have made a point to do it. So obviously, we all do this. So this is nothing new. What I'm trying to say is that this idea of a double standard, we all have a double standard. We do. And what the Torah wants us to do is just don't have a double standard. First and foremost, bottom line, treat everybody else the way you treat yourself. We all know the pasuk. The pasuk says, love your neighbor as yourself. Right? So there are so many lessons you have to learn from there. But the basic lesson is, as much credit as you give yourself, you have to give them that credit too. You have to judge them that way too. Yeah.
You have something here about talking in shul.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say I never talked in shul.
Yeah.
When we were in the old shul, there was somebody that used to sit in front of me. He was no longer in the shul. Whenever he came into the shul, he talked the whole time. It was very, very annoying. When the time moved, I was very happy. When we came to the new shul, I sat in a place when I don't have friends near me, really.
You sit right next to him. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
He came a long way. He came a long way.
No, I know.
Yeah. Man,
okay.
Sometimes somebody comes and sits next to me, and he talks to me. I don't want to be rude to him and tell him no. I mean, I'm not going to say I don't talk to him.
Sure.
But I don't want to talk.
Yeah.
I don't want to offend him.
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
Because you know why? Because you don't want to be firmer than thou.
No. Because yeah, right. You don't want to transform New York.
What?
You have to think about who it is.
Well, if you say to him, listen, I'm no angel, but I'm trying to make a point not to talk during davening. You know? You could say, I think that person would respect you. You know, you don't have to make it like, talk to you during davening. Who are you? You know?
But I don't sit there constantly talking. With this person, I wind up constantly talking.
Yeah.
And I'm annoyed at it myself.
Sure.
Because I know the people around me are annoyed.
Okay. But I think at least you're annoyed at yourself. I think you could tell the guy. You said, listen, I love sitting next to you, but this is a tiber for me. This is a tiber for me. It really is. You know, and I think a person who truly wants to be in davening would respect you. You know, as long as you're honest about it and not you know, high and mighty. You know, I'm no angel either. I try my best, but I know people are looking at me. And every now and then I have something to say or I have to say something to somebody, you know. Things go on in the show that have to be taken care of. You know, it's also something, you know, we all know that during Musaf, before Chazaras Hashatz, I just ask everybody to sit down. I never say to people not to talk. Well, sometimes I do, but I never, not that point. Why? Because all I'm trying to do is minimize the opportunity. You know, if you're standing in the aisle, of course you're going to talk because people are walking by. Hi, how are you? If you're sitting by your seat, the only person you can talk to is the guy next to you. If that's all it is, it's much more manageable.
I don't talk to him either.
Does it take two to talk, though? If you don't answer, they're not loud.
Nah, it's not easy. It's not simple. It's not simple. It's not simple. Okay, well, all I'm saying is we all have this double standard. And the idea is, especially during this time, you want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give us the benefit of the doubt. That's going to be the theme, obviously. You have to give other people the benefit of the doubt also. And at least give them the credit you would give yourself. No more, no less. So that's lesson number one in judging other people. Right, give people the credit you would give yourself. The excuses we make for ourselves are the reasons we give for ourselves, very legitimate. Oh, I was late. I got tied up. I got this. Now, let's be honest. Very often, the reason we were late was very insensitive. Well, we were insensitive. You know what I'm saying? It's the reason we were late. But Even when we are insensitive, we say to ourselves, oh, well, they got caught in traffic, blah, blah, blah. So at least give the other person the same benefit of the doubt, not to get so upset. That's number one. Okay? Oh, I have all these other pages. I'm sorry, I didn't have... It was kind of a last-minute thing. It's been a busy day. So we're going to give out one page at a time.
It's a big job to do.
What? The sheet?
Yeah.
Ironically, the sheets, I got pretty good at it. Don't take long at all. I mean, the hard part is preparing what you want to put on the sheet. That takes a long time. Once I know what I want, to scan it in and to put it on the sheet is very easy. If you know how to do it. That's number one. Number two, the second way to judge somebody favorably. The second way to judge somebody favorably comes from the Gemara in Shabbos. The 18th parak of Shabbos. Okay? And basically, this is the bend over backwards, ad nauseum, ridiculous excuse. Judge somebody favorably. Okay? Well, I'll call it the bend over backwards method. Says the Gemara, Tana Rabbanan, Hadan Chaveiro, Lekashchus, Danin Oso Lishchus. Now, if you want God to judge us favorably, you have to judge somebody else favorably. You might be familiar with this story. You know what? Let's take your pen and line number the line so you'll be able to follow. If somebody invents a program that'll auto number these things, I would buy it. Maybe I'll write a paper report and see if they can do that. It's a really good program. Tana Rabbana. I'm sorry. Line two. I'm on line two. He went from the upper Galilee. He got a job and he worked for a guy for 3 years. He lived in the upper Galilee. He left his family, left his friends, for 3 years he worked in the south, in the Negev. Okay? And it's not like today where they have cell phones and communication. He worked hard. Erev Yom Kippur. Now, if you think that in this story Erev Yom Kippur is a coincidence, you're kidding yourself. Amarlo, it's Erev Yom Kippur on the third year, he said to his boss, pay me shachari. Pay me. You know, it's about time. Ve'elech ve'azon et ishti uvanai. Is there noise bothering people? You want to close the door? You're okay. That's okay. Okay. We can hear the basic address. Good. Give me my reward, give me behemi, and I'm going to go feed my wife and my children. Sounds fair, right? Sounds reasonable. Amar lo, end of line 5. Ein li mos. Well, sorry, don't have any money. Amar lo, so he said, okay, tein li peiros. I'll take produce, I'll go sell it, I'm okay. Amar lo, ein li. So he said to him, sorry, don't have any. Tein li karka. Well, if you don't have fruit, how about this land? You know, I'm not an idiot, you got something. Ein li. Don't have any of that either. Now remember, by the way, he's been working this guy's land for the past 3 years. Right, so what would you say if somebody starts saying, oh, I don't have any land? Or is else thinking,
I don't buy it.
I don't buy it. Good. Tein li behema. Well, do me a favor. How about an animal? I'll take something. Tein li. Don't have any. Tein li kari v'kistos. Okay, then I'll take pillows and blankets. Beginning of line 8. Tein li. Sorry, don't have anything. I don't have anything. Oh, what's this big mansion I've been working in for the past 3 years? Well, you know, what can you do? Okay. Line 8, this is how it says it. Hifshil kelav la'achorav. Hifshil kelav la'achorav means he took his sack, swung it on his back, v'halachlo, v'beito, and he went home. Right? Working 3 years, away from his family, away from his children, he finally thinks it's Erev Yom Kippur. He thinks he's going to get paid. Can you imagine Erev Yom Kippur, somebody comes and is working for 3 years, and after 3 years he finds out the guy he's been working for won't pay him, and also claims to have nothing. The Pachei Nefesh. Halach Abeisho, the Pachei Nefesh. Very embittered. Line 9 in the middle. La'acha HaRegel. After Yontif, after Sukkot, Natal Baal Habayis Scharo V'yodo. The Baal Habayis brought the money. Oh. The Imo Masui Gimel Chamorim Achad Shemachal. And with him he had 3 donkeys, one of food, Echad Shemishta, one of drink, Echad Shemine Megadin, and one of, you know, delicacies. What?
Good stuff.
The Halach Lo Lubeso. And he traveled, this owner traveled to the Upper Galilee to his house. Achad Sheachlu V'shasu. After they ate and drank, Nasan Lo Scharo. So he paid him. He said, here's your money. Amar lo, he said to him, "Bishaa she'amarta li tein li schari." When you said to me, you know, "Nu, it's Erev Yom Kippur, pay up." I'm on line 14, the beginning of the line. "Ve'amarti," and I said, "Ein li mos," and I said, "I have no money." "B'mecha sharitani." Tell me, what did you think? What did you think? So, what did we think? You crook. That's what we thought. So he says, "What did you think?" Beginning of line 15. Amarti, I said, Shema prakmatia bizol nizam lalacha v'lakachta behem. He said, you know what I thought? I thought, well, maybe you came across a great deal on merchandise. Right? You came across this huge shipment of light bulbs. You bought up the entire shipment of light bulbs, and you had no cash on hand. That's what I thought. The guy continues. Line 16. Ubashasha amarta tamei behema. The Amarti Amy to him. So when I said, when you said, okay, give me an animal, I said, I have no animal. What did you think of me? So he says, Amarti Shema Muskeret Biyad Acherim. I said, well, maybe you rented them out to somebody else. He says, okay. B'shashe Amarta Li Tein Li Karka. The Amarti Li Karka. When you said, okay, give me the land, and I said, I don't have any land. B'mecha Sharetani. What did you think of me? Because Amarti, I said, Shema Muchadet liyad acherim. What is that word? I don't even see it. Muchacheret. Not sold it. I think it means it's in hock. Yeah. But Bashar Shah Amarti Amy Pirah says, when you have no food, Bamechar Shadatani. So what did you think? Amarti, I said, Shema Enu Musaros. Maybe you didn't take off Maisher yet. Maisher means the tithe. You didn't take off the tithe. Bashar Shah Amarti Lecha Amy Kari Mekistos. Okay, when I said I didn't have any pillows and blankets, what did you think then? Bamechar Shadatani. Amarti, I said, Shema Hikdish Kon Lechasav Lashamayim. I thought, well, maybe you dedicated everything to the Beis Hamikdash. Strange? Amar Lei said to him, Ha'avuda Kach Haya. That's exactly what happened. He died to call the Chai Bishvil Hurkinus Benish Shalom Asak Batorah. I wanted my son, he wasn't involved, he was going off and, you know, listening to MTV all the time, and he wasn't involved in things he should have been involved in. So I said, I made a neder, I made an oath to God that I would give everything I owned in order to make my son better. When I came to my friends in the Darum in the south, then they were matir neder, they took away my oath, and I got my money back. Just like you judge me favorably, Kadosh Baruch Hu judge you favorably. So here, what happened? Give me the money. I don't have any money. You're a rich guy, we don't have any money. So he figured, this is what he figured. He figured, he came into some crazy deal. He put all his horses were rented out. His land was in hock. His food wasn't ready, and all his possessions belonged to the Beis Hamikdash. Right, what is the likelihood of that happening?
Zero.
Well, 0.00001%. Except it happened. So says the Gemara. Sometimes, you know, so I call this the bend over backwards concocted story theory, right? When somebody does something to you, or you see something that seems inappropriate, so the Gemara says, it would be a nice thing for us. You want the Kodesh Baruch Hu to judge you favorably? One way to judge somebody favorably is to concoct some kind of crazy story. I mean, I wanted this to be a little bit more open-up. Does anybody have any crazy stories like that, where they thought somebody was doing something, but it turns out that they weren't doing something? I'll give a good example. It happened to me today. Yeah. Happened to me today. Today, I was, I was at the hospital, and Rav Box is there. And so we were talking, and he says, there's a VAD meeting going on. Are you going to go? I said, yeah, I'm going to go. I'll go on Wednesday. See, we're talking about the VAD meeting. I said, okay, I'll take care of whatever the problem was. Fine. I get to the JCC. I'm going to go work out. Mina calls me, and she says, Rabbi Morris called, and wants to know if you're going to the VAD meeting today. I said, what VAD meeting today? The VAD meeting is on Wednesday. The normal VAD meeting is on Wednesday. So he says, no, there's a special VAD meeting to discuss the whole Jewish news fiasco. So here's what I started thinking to myself. I never got the letter. I never received any information about it. But it just so happens that I also sit on the Michigan Board of Rabbis. And I do so, you know, I don't hide it. I'm not ashamed of it. I believe in it. What? The Farhesia. Correct. I do. I think that it's important. I believe what I do. But I've been taking a lot of heat about it, especially from the Vada Rabbanim. And I understand their position. Apparently there was a meeting some 50 years ago where it was concluded that anyone who sits on the Michigan Board of Rabbis could also not sit on the Vada Rabbanim. Apparently there's such a rule. I've never seen it in writing, but apparently such a rule. So here's what I start thinking. I can't believe it. So it's not enough that they give me a hard time about it. They kick me off the list without even saying anything to me. And now they're having meetings about issues that are, you know, and they don't tell me about it. They're not thinking, getting worked up about it, getting all upset. So I call the secretary and I say, did you send me a letter? And she says, sure, I sent you a letter. 26061 Marlow Place, right? I said, no, 26081 Marlow Place. Oh, sorry. Well, you'll get the next one. You got it? See, here I'm all worked up and getting all upset and getting all, you know, they have me today. It's human nature. Because psychologically, our instinct is to blow it into the worst case scenario. What could the worst possible thing that could happen be? And that's what happened.
Wrong address.
What?
The wrong address.
Yeah. And she sent me the wrong address. She sent the wrong address. I would like to know why my neighbor didn't bring it over, but that's another story.
He tried.
Oh,
yeah,
that's
your
direction.
Now, that, not only give him my mail, collect my mail. If you keep some of the bills, that would be. So, in the Gemara, the Gemara takes it entirely the other way. Now, in this book, the other side of the story, which I think is very worthwhile. Does anybody get it? They were out of it. There's some just wonderful stories. I think we mentioned the one about the guy with the photographer, right? With the burned food, right? Janice might have mentioned a bunch of those in her class, but it happens all the time. It does happen that extenuating circumstances take place. But which do we do? We do the extenuating circumstances entirely the other way. And we try to figure out what possibly could have happened bad that I could blame the other guy, instead of saying what possibly could have happened good that it wouldn't be his fault. And this is an example of the Gemara kids. It's a very, very powerful example about judging others favorably. Yeah, Reza, if anybody else wants to share their crazy stories, I'm opening myself up here. So, yeah.
I have a question about this Gemara. I know when a worker works day and has to pay him.
Yeah.
Right? Now, I don't know what the situation was, but it just doesn't seem logical for 3 years.
I guess that was the agreement. I'm sure he was sustaining him. He was paying for his sustenance, but he said at the end of the job, you're allowed to hire a person for a job and pay them at the end of the job. Some jobs take 3 days, some lawsuits take 3 years. You get paid on retainer or you get paid at the end?
On the IFCOM,
all right. Yeah.
Somebody works 7 days for a wife?
Yeah, right?
I think he was like a lot of fun. But it said he went home from bitter. Now he's thinking all these positive thoughts.
Well, don't get me wrong. I would be embittered also if I came. Can you imagine going home to your wife and your children? They say, "Okay, you worked 3 years. What'd you get?" Yeah, exactly. And we're not talking about It's hard. It's a struggle.
I don't imagine the reception
you
got at home was too
good. There you go. I think you're right. You got ripped off for 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's the bend. I think that's the second one. The bend over. Is that the first one? Oh, that's the bend over backwards way of judging others favorably. That's hard. I'll admit it now. It's very hard to do.
Helps me get through the morning commute. Somebody cuts me off.
Oh, he must have an emergency.
I imagine this story about how this guy has to be someplace and his sick wife is next to him, and he has to get there. I'm not so agitated.
I'll be honest with you. The same thing happened to me today.
Uh-huh.
I went to go see Mrs. Blitz. She's really well, and she wasn't doing well. So I need to go get my madrich. The rabbi guide thing, and I'm driving back to shul and then back to, I'm going faster than I usually would, and I'm passing some guy and I'm thinking, I wonder what he's thinking, and it happens all the time. Sometimes we have emergencies, sometimes other people do, Okay, that's number one. Number two, I think the second way is, let's say they don't have a good reason. What if they have a bad reason? What if they don't have a good reason? What if they have a bad reason? I'll read you the following examples in this book. It's a good book. I don't know if you read it all in one sitting. Yes. What if they have an excuse? Okay. For example, where am I?
What if they don't pay it?
What?
What if you're doing a contract and the guy decides not to pay it? You don't pay your half.
One second. I'm not talking about somebody who's wrong, who is cheating, who is stealing. What if they have a bad excuse? What if they say, I forgot. I'm sorry, I forgot. I didn't come through for you. I knew you were counting on me, but I didn't. Right? So, why? So, if we don't come through for somebody, what do we say? I really meant to, but I had a lot. I had a lot on my mind. I was under a lot of pressure. Oh, I'm absent-minded. I just couldn't do it. I knew I should get to it. Right? I really meant to. Are those good excuses? No, they're bad excuses. They've got more. Okay? It was the end of a long day. How many times have we said that to ourselves? I can't tell you how many times have we raised our voices to our children because we were having a hard time. And it's so circular. And, you know, especially with young children, you see it right away. Like, why are you yelling at me? What did I do? And what's the answer? I had a bad day. So is that an excuse? No. Oh, it's a terrible habit of mine. Right? I mean, it's hard for me when people say, you know, Rabbi, we just talk. What can I do? I talk during the evening. And they say that. They say that. I'm not the only one who does it. You get that?
All I can think of when I hear that is my mother. I hear my mother's voice. Right. If everybody's going to jump off the Brooklyn Bridge, you're going to jump off the Brooklyn Bridge too? Smart mother.
I wouldn't have done it, but she provoked me. Or
the atomic.
I just reached my breaking point. I couldn't take it anymore. Bad excuses. Okay? Or, as soon as I said it, I felt terrible. Sometimes things come out of your mouth and you just like, oh, why did I just say that? You know, it happens. I have a lot of good ones here. They're very good ones. All right? So, what? They're both excuses and reasons. You know what I'm saying? So, but all I'm saying is we all use them, right? So when I use it, it's okay. But when the other guy uses it, it's not okay. So if number one was try to come up with a really good excuse, oh, he's running to the hospital and his wife's in labor and he has to go fast, and that's why he's cutting me off. And that's why it's okay. The other second reason why it's okay is, you know what? He's having a bad day. And I'm not going to hold it against him. Because I have my bad days too. And that's not, you know, number one is very hard to do. But number two, I think it's a lot easier. It's a lot easier to say, you know what? Everybody has bad days. Try to let it roll off your back.
Except the guy who's going zigzag in and out like this. I mean, how much forgiveness
can there is a limit. There is a limit. What?
That
yeah, there's a limit. You know where I would. You know where I would. I draw the limit at where the person is. I would say breaking the law, breaking the Torah. You know, between inconsiderate and illegal. Right? Is he cutting you off? Is he driving a little too fast? Or is he reckless? You know what I'm saying?
Speed limit is.
Oh, you're right. You never drive over the speed limit.
No. The speed limit is 70. I've gotten my... I've been at 70. I put my cruise at 75.
Yeah, and he zooms by.
Wait, somebody said 90.
I'm just saying, I'm staying in the... Like, say, in the middle lane. This guy comes, passes me in the left, goes into my lane, goes to the right, goes to... comes back right into the left and keeps on.
Yeah, so,
and then he turns. I mean, a half of a mile away.
I don't think you have to judge that guy's favor.
So,
I think that guy's wrong. That guy's wrong. Right, just stay back.
You know, another thing. Anybody who's watching, faster than you is a maniac, and anybody who's slower than you is an idiot.
Yeah.
Anybody who's slower than you is an idiot. Faster is an idiot.
Okay. Another thing to remember. So we went through the list. Another thing to remember. People that go through difficult experiences, let's say, I don't know, a couple's getting divorced. You know, someone's parent is sick or whatever it is. Very often, when they're in pain, they will project that pain onto somebody else. You know, you see it all the time, you know. Let's say, you know, unfortunately, a divorce lawyer explained this to me once. He says, when you're a divorce lawyer, everybody tells you their worst secrets, their worst nightmares, you know, the things that they do because they have to tell you so that you can use it against the other person. What happens if that couple reconciles? Mm-hmm. Right? So they reconcile. They love each other, right? They've forgiven each other, except...
They hate
you. Mm-hmm. Why? Because you remind them of everything they hate about themselves.
Oh, do you want a story about...
Yeah, give me one.
This is a great story. When my first cousin was sick and going to Beaumont Hospital, I was visiting all the time back and forth, and I happened to have overheard two nurses talking. This is right after Jimmy had the stroke. He'd been comatose for about 10 days. and he pulled through, and Baruch Hashem, he was okay at that point and was on the road to recovery. And I hear these two nurses talking. Can you imagine that woman? She left the phone number of a funeral home. He's not that sick. Say, excuse me, that's where I work. So that was the story that I had to
tell. Well, that's not a good example, because that's the bend over backwards to try to understand. That's the bend over backwards. That's a far fetched one. That's a good story, though.
I hear them whispering, and I can't imagine they're giving me dirty looks.
What I'm saying is, if you're in that situation, it's very easy then to see things that people things people do innocuously negatively, because your whole world is clouded by the pain that you're in. And I think that it's very important for us to realize that most people are in pain about something or other, and people have difficult times dealing with things. Everybody's got their peccala, and it's very interesting. But as a rabbi, I think my davening has become different of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, because the more you understand the things that people have to deal with, the more you understand, that everybody's got their issues and their things, and that it's hard for them. And so, even if they snap at you, and even if they're wrong, let's say they don't have an excuse. Let's say you can't bend over backwards. You could say, I wouldn't want that kind of issue, and let it go. That's being down the cusp also.
That's why my father said, so it on the mountain.
Yeah.
The only one that has a name on it, sure.
Right.
You'll go up and take it. Because you don't know what you're going to get from somebody else.
That's true. But what I'm saying is, what I'm saying is, they were wrong. They shouldn't have said what they said. They shouldn't have done what they did. But look at the background. Look at what's causing it. And then you understand, it's not such a big deal. Not such a big deal. Not worth getting upset about. Okay. That's number two. See if there's a bad reason. Number three. I saw this, Rav. I don't know if you asked Rav Solo's his fear, but I stole it from him, basically, unabashedly. Okay. One second. Unabashedly. I'll give you page three. This is from Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. It's really nifty. I like this very much. This is okay. I gave you the whole thing, even though we don't need the whole thing. Number three. Okay? You can't find a bad reason. Good reason. You can't find a bad reason. No excuse for what he did. So how do I judge the person? Says Rabbi Nachman. Da. No. Ki tzarich ladun et kol adam lekav zchut. Were you anybody here at Rassobel's thing? Rassobel's thing? Yeah. So it'll be a review. But it's so good. It's so good. Rav Sobel is very into Breslov Hasidus, which kind of surprises you, but he's full of surprises.
Have you ever seen him standing
there? In doing his espotidus, yeah, right. Walking in the forest, you mean? Like Rabbi Nachman? Va'afilo mishehu rasha gamur. Let's say somebody's evil, he's bad, he's driving 90. Right, Eddie? No excuses. Tzarich lechapes v'limtso bo eze ma'atto. You still have to go find in that person the little good. And that small thing, he's not evil. And in that way, that you say, oh, that guy's a reckless driver. He's terrible. He's over. I can't believe it. But you say, but...
What a nice suit he's wearing.
What a nice car
he has. Right. But he likes nice cars. He likes fine things, I guess. You have to bring it something a little more personal. That person, it talks incessantly during davening. I can't stand it. But he's a very kind-hearted person.
There's something good about a Russian. He doesn't talk Torah in the bathroom.
Right. Well, right. That's I like that one. But al yedei zeh, then ma'ale oto be'emet lekav zchut, v'yuchal lehashivo b'tshuva. He says, you have to judge a person for the better, not for you, not how you react, but for them. If you see the positive, says Rabbi Nachman, in the bad, if you can pick out that little good and say, oh, but I still love you because you're a kind-hearted person. or, you know, or you're generous, or you take time, or you whatever. That good that you draw out of that person will machziro b'tshuva. Why? Line 5. Ki afal pi shehu rasha, even though he's evil, ech eshar she'ein bo ma'at tov adayin. How is it possible that there's still no little bit of good? Ki ech eshar shelo asha ezo mitzvah o davar tov mi'amav. He had to have done something good, some mitzvah during his lifetime. And through the fact that you find the good in him, he's not evil in that area, and you judge him for positive, then you really bring him into kafskut. Find the good. Oh, I don't keep the mitzvahs. Well, there's a lot of things. Do you honor your parents? Oh, of course I honor my parents. Well, that's a mitzvah. You know, there's always something you can find in somebody to connect them back, says Rabbi Nachman.
What's your seagull was good to his mother?
Right.
Yeah?
I was just thinking about that.
What book is that? I didn't know that. What is that?
Well, he was in the Purple Gang.
Yeah, a little before my time.
But he was good to his mother, but he loved his mother, something like that. The book about his life. I was just thinking about that.
Right, but there is a lot of truth to it. Even people who are evil, even people who do wrong, you have to bring out the good in them. And if you focus on the good, that good, I think Rabbi Nachman says, wants to come out. Badly wants to come out. And it allows him to focus on his good and not just on his own bad. Oh, I'm terrible. That is what I do. Yeah, but you do this, and you do this, and you do that. You're not such a terrible person. Then he doesn't have the excuse anymore to say he's terrible. And allows him to draw himself back. So that's Rabbi Nachman. It's very powerful. I thought, that's number 3. Even if you can't find any good reason, even if you can't find a bad reason, you can't still find the good. Because there is good. And even if you don't do it for yourself, do it for them. Okay. That's number 3. Method number 4. Method number 4 is for Yom Kippur. That's it. You can't find good. You can't find a bad reason. There's no good in the person. They slighted you for no reason. They weren't tired that day. They weren't hungry that day. Their life is perfect. They're wealthy. They're healthy. They have no problems whatsoever. And you can't find any redeeming quality in them whatsoever. What? Okay, it's not possible, but in theory. In theory. How do you judge them favorably? You have to forgive them anyway. If they ask for forgiveness, if they say, I'm sorry, you have to forgive them anyway. You know why? That's exactly what we do to God on Yom Kippur. Okay? We don't need to confess in front of our other people. But do we have a good excuse for the things that we do that we know we shouldn't have done? Do we have a bad excuse? I really wanted to is a bad excuse. So maybe God will find the redeeming parts in us and bring us to tshuva. But we don't have a good excuse and we don't have a bad excuse. So still, what do we say? We say this, it's replete through the davening. I just picked one really good example. About him. Elokai, God, atshelo notzarti eini kedai. Before I was formed, I was unworthy. V'achshav shelo notzarti, and now that I was created, ki'ilu lo notzarti, is it as if I had not been formed. Why? What does that mean? Why is it as if I had not been formed? It's the Edison Manasseh right after the confession. Why? I am a piece of dirt. I'm nothing. You know what I did this year. Right? I would have been better off had you not created me. And now that you did, I still haven't done what I was supposed to do. Very harsh, very strong words. Afar ani b'chayai, I'm a piece of dirt in life. I'm nothing. Kal v'chomer b'misasi. Kal v'chomer, it's a good kal v'chomer, how much more so? When I die. Hare ani lefanecha kechli male busha uchlima. There's nothing to say. I don't have a good excuse. I don't have a bad excuse. I'm just embarrassed. Yiratzon lefanecha Hashem Elokai v'Elokei Avosai. Let it be will. Let it be your will. Shelo echtod. I don't want to sin anymore. Umashe chatasu lefanecha, and that which I have sinned before you. Marek berachamecha harabim, cleanse with your abundant mercy. So what do I say? Do I say, well, God, I was, you know, I'm going to the thing, and I had to say this thing, and I was had a bad day, and I wasn't feeling well, and I, you know, you say, forget it. I'm going to say the excuses, because I know they don't really mean anything. So what do I just say? I'm sorry. There's nothing else to say. I'm just honest. And that's the way you have to judge other people, too. If there's no there's no good answer, there's no bend over backwards, and there's no bad answer, and we're not having a bad day, and they don't have problems, they don't have a problem, even so, and this is really true, when you see somebody with a real problem, you have to have rahmanas. I'll give you an example about talking in shul. There are people who can't stop themselves from talking. And you know, I do feel bad for them. I feel bad for them. Now, it's a problem that has to be addressed because it interrupts and it bothers other people. You see somebody who they're just negative. So at some point, you have to stop saying, why was he negative to me? How come he's so nasty to me? And you have to start saying, you know what? It's a rachmanis. It's not about me anymore. It's a rachmanis. And that's what we say to Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's rachmanis. It's not about you. You know, we all know what you are. We know that I'm nothing. I'm a piece of dirt. So please, just forgive me. But I love this. This is my favorite line. But do me a favor. Don't make it hard. We just like throw that one in there, right? Once you're forgiving me, go all the way. You know?
But then you talk to somebody that's asking for material.
Yeah.
So people that don't even ask for material.
Okay, then. You're right.
You don't have to give. There's nothing to give. It's somebody else. And then
you know what?
It's easier to live with him.
I think it's easier to live with him.
So what are they asking about?
What? Who, what are they davening for?
In other words,
you're saying that there are some people that have there are people that have wronged you that don't think they wronged you because that's just their way.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying to you is you have to have rachmanis on them. You know why? It's sad. You know, you can think, we all can think of somebody who behaves in this way who doesn't even know it. It's so ingrained in their personality. And instead of saying, I'm not forgiving them, they don't ask for forgiveness. What you have to say is, Marek berachamecha harabim. Cleanse it in your compassion. Why? Because the Kodesh Baruch Hu one, you wanted God to have compassion on us. I don't have a good excuse, I don't have a bad excuse. I just did it. And I know I just did it. You know why I did it? Because I wanted to. Is that a good reason? Or a bad reason? No. So, please, have compassion on me. Have mercy. You want mercy, and even if the God doesn't forgive and doesn't ask for a rachmanis. And I'm not saying you have to forgive him, you know, because he feels bad and because you want to establish a relationship again. You don't want him. That's a different kind of forgiveness. But you have to have rachmanis.
I didn't do it because I was bad, because I wanted to. What would you say as a parent?
Well, then you have to educate a child what's right and what's not. That's an educational issue. Let's be honest with you. Many things kids do, they do because they wanted to. Why did you hit the ball through the window? Why did you throw it so far? You know what the kid will often tell you?
It was an accident.
No, it wasn't an accident.
I didn't mean to.
I did. What? I wanted to see if I could really throw the ball through the window. I wanted to see. Why did you do that? What? Because I'm a kid. And kids do dumb things. You know?
I took a mother's expensive perfume and poured it into the toast. I wanted to see how it swirled in the water.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but that's very young. I mean, when the kids are teenagers. So we're the same way. Where does that work? You know, I'm telling you, a lot of kids, dumb things kids do, they know it's wrong, they know they're going to get caught, and they know they shouldn't do it, but they want to. They just want to, especially teenagers. I mean, you guys know this much better than I do, I'm sure. Much better. So you know what you say? And later they feel bad and they say, I'm sorry. You're sorry now, you weren't sorry then. Right? So we do the same thing. So I think that as we approach Yom Kippur, we have to have this attitude. This is a good way of approaching Yom Kippur. when we relate to other, when we judge other people, and we judge ourselves. It's time to really, you know, it's very hard to set aside time to look back. It's hard to do it chronologically, but it's easy to do it. It's easier to do it in behaviorally. What kind of person am I? How do I behave? How do I react to things? You know, how do I relate to mitzvot, to certain mitzvot, to certain behaviors, to certain things? You know, what kind of things do I know that I have desires for that I shouldn't, that I should try to stay away from? And if we're going to want God to have this attitude towards us, of cleansing us, of forgiving us, so then we have to learn to be forgiving people as well. And I think that what we find is that when you learn to forgive other people and let it roll off your back, and either find a good reason, if it's there, find the bad reason, which is always there, right? Or find the good in the person. It makes us happier, better people. We become happier for it. Which is ultimately probably why God forgives us too. Because if He's the greatest, He does the greatest thing. And that's the benefit of Yom Kippur. So I wish you all a meaningful week and a meaningful fast. And I have to leave you before I finish. The reason I brought this in here was, this is very nifty. Let me see if it'll start up. There's a song I want to share with you. So I got into somebody got me into this singer, and his name is Yosef Karduna. Anybody ever heard of him? He's an Israeli guy. So look on page 3. This is a really nifty song. I love this song, right? But I love the song even before I knew what it was from. And then Rav Shlomo gave the seer. And then you'll see if you recognize the song. Okay, now start. Okay, we'll start in a minute, maybe. Yosef Karduna. Somebody asked me today, how long does it take this thing to boot up? I don't know, it's a good question. I'll leave you with that.